Welcome everyone listening in. It is my honor to be your guest podcast host today. My name is Kakuli Bhattacharya. I'm a qualitative research professor at the University of Florida. With me is Dr. Jung-Eun Ri, professor of education at Long Island University. This podcast, Qualitative Conversations, is produced by the Qualitative Research SIG at AERA. Professor Jung-Eun Ri recently authored a text, Decolonial Feminist Research, Haunting, Rememory, and Mothers, which is part of my Futures of Data Analysis and Qualitative Research series hosted with Rutledge. The book has already created a lot of buzz and challenged people's understanding of home, memories, relationalities, transnational existence, and multiple forces of oppression that cross borders without being categorized as a specific kind of qualitative research. It is my distinct pleasure to welcome Dr. Jung-Eun Ri. Welcome.
Thank you for that wonderful introduction, Kali. I feel so honored to be here.
So to begin our conversation, give us an overview of your academic journey and how you came to write the book.
There are so many different ways. I think I can answer the question. But at the same time, I'm not sure if I can clearly lay out a path I have walked that led to write this book. At least what I can share, though, is that my academic journey has been never separable from my personal, cultural, geopolitical, and even spiritual journey. And I think this recognition is in fact how I was able to write this book. And of course, it was not simply my journey either, right? So my journey has intersected or integrated with my family's journey in the context of larger historical relations as well. And having said that, I also think if we assume that we can know and explain how we've come to where we are in certainty, I think it can be our arrogant assumption. And I think that's also a point I made in my book. I mean, the question that I pursued in the book was, what do we do with what we can never explain, right? So I think there are certain aspects that I do not know how to explain in terms of how, you know, my last 30 years of academic life, including my graduate school experiences, et cetera, has led me to write this book. But what I know is that I could write this book because I have learned or remembered how to connect with my mothers, not just singular but plural, right? My mothers and ancestors of this land and then of other lands who have prepared a space for me to do my work. And this this book is in fact a testimony or even a question about my journey, both academic and spiritual, that reveals these connections.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing that. It is really interesting. Like, it's not like something that you can like fully map, but it could be another book and in and of itself if you just write the journey to writing this book. Like, it's a prequel to the book, perhaps, you know. I know that I introduced your book as something that doesn't really fit a certain category or certain type of qualitative research very distinctively. It would be really lovely to hear how you see this book in the larger context of the terrain of qualitative research.
So let me first express my gratitude to you, Kakali, as a series editor on Future of Data Analysis in Qualitative Research, who really encouraged me to think of your series as an outlet of my book. And as I actually talked about in my book, I had worked on this book almost 5 years. And during those years, I actually didn't plan out to slate my work as a qualitative research book per se. I mean, in fact, I didn't know how to characterize the book until I completed the manuscript. I mean, what I knew was that this work was an inquiry, my inquiry, but I wasn't sure if the qualitative research field itself was big enough to include my work as a qualitative research. And so, Kakali, your gesture of welcoming, however, you know, slight that move was like in the context, in the large context of the whole field, still made a such a big impact on how I saw potentials of both my work and the field of qualitative research. So I just want to thank you for your vision for the field and also your using editorial position to open up and expand the boundary of the field. From my perspective as a qualitative researcher, what I hope that my book contributes to is to offer more possibilities of producing sharing and then remembering healing knowledge. I think it's interesting that, you know, technically, as I also shared in the book, I didn't have a proposal, research a proposal for this book. I didn't have a human subject, nor methodology. You know, my field work included both physical and metaphysical interactions. And my theoretical perspectives came from Toni Morrison's fiction, Beloved, and Teresa Hakyung Cha's experimental autobiographical poetry, Dictee. And my research question was, like, what do you do when you're haunted by your mother's memory? But in this writing as an inquiry process, what I was able to notice and learn was that, in fact, there have been so much work done that I could build on to pursue my question. Also, my question was not simply my question. There have been so many other women, particularly of color, who have asked similar questions. That was how I realized that my work was a part of a larger knowledge project, which I named eventually in the book, Transnational Intergenerational Decolonial Feminist Knowledge Project. I hope that my work shows how our deeply personal question is in fact a way to connect with a larger collective question that many interconnected diverse communities have pursued. And when we build those connections between our personal and collective, we can produce different knowledge differently. I think here what mattered was not about following particular techniques or methodologies in terms of technicality, utility, productivity, and rules of rules and regulations, but about being able to ask and work with and live with our questions.
Yeah, so, you know, your question, I mean, your response to my question makes me think about how qualitative research broadly is moving away from being like this technocratic social science to a more humanistic oriented inquiry versus you know, certain steps and procedures we do to think in very technocratic social science way. We do these steps, we collect this data, we analyze it doing 4 or 5 different strategies or steps or approaches. Then we triangulate everything to make everything check and conform with everything else and have verifiability. And then we know we got something. Whereas you are doing this work and you're saying that the unknown is this fertile ground of inquiry, and it can still remain unknown as a result of the inquiry too, or it can create many types of knowings without any certainty or any members check or any triangulation or any peer debriefing. It can still remain a very open-ended inquiry as a result of an inquiry.
Right. So at the level of, you know, I think methodology, like, absolutely, I think that's kind of what I've tried to, I guess, share, not purposefully, but because that's what happened. But then at the level of epistemology, and then even episteme, I think what I try to show is that actually by really paying attention to this intergenerational, transnational, decolonial feminist knowledge that have existed across the globe, right? Mm-hmm. That I was able to actually connect with it in the name of science, and how that opened up a new way or different way or, you know, relational kind of way of actually noticing the part of reality that I actually forgot.
Yeah, yeah. And that's a Western training and colonizing training that teaches us to forget our own knowledges. And so that's always a question that I keep asking myself, what knowledge am I forgetting? You know? What knowledge am I forgetting? There are two anchoring ideas in your book that are rememory and haunting, which is appropriate for forgetting knowledge, or haunted by the notion of losing our connectivity. Could you talk a bit about how you came across these ideas and why they become such critical anchoring for you?
So rememory and haunting are effective concepts, meaning that to know what they are, you have to feel them. That's how you learn what rememory and haunting are. No amount of reading will allow you to know what they are, how they work, and how they change you. And so I want to kind of put this out first. And you know, conceptually, rememory was first coined and introduced by Toni Morrison in her book, Beloved. And according to Morrison, rememory is both remembering and forgetting at the same time that stays both in person and place that can be encountered by others. This notion or even existence of rememory completely ruptures how empirical modern science functions. I mean, think about it. What does this mean that rememory is both the remembering and forgetting at the same time? How is it possible for one's rememory stay both in and outside a person's mind? If rememory stays in place as well, who's remembering? I mean, I can go on with all these questions, right, that come from our scientific intelligibility. And to me, rememory of place has become like the source of haunting, as it is someone else's memory that changes us. And so haunting becomes a demand from those who refuse to be forgotten. And I highlighted effective aspects of rememory and haunting because I had read Beloved so many times, but I really didn't get them. I mean, I cognitively understood what they were. Only after my mother's death and after my mother left her memory for me to encounter, I became able to see what remembering and haunting were. And so I think like this is the point that I wanted to put out in terms of like what I meant by effective concepts. And I think, you know, the famous instruction of Audre Lorde, who said that master's tool cannot dismantle master's house, it is very relevant here. I don't think I could figure out how to ask my questions with my academic training only. But with this absolutely non-scientific concepts of rememory and haunting, which doesn't mean that they're not true, right? But with those, I started my super personal inquiry through my mother's death and her rememories haunting. And in fact, her life was deeply implicated in US Imperial War in Korea. And through my work, now I'm carrying her rememory in this territory of the United States, where my mother's rememory interacts with other mothers of color's rememories. And without this kind of embodied spiritual relationships that have become the source of knowledge, I don't think I could have made sense of my experience and wrote this book.
The Qualitative Research Special Interest Group was established in 1987 to create a space within the American Educational Research Association for the discussion of ethical, philosophical, and methodological issues in qualitative research. We invite you to consider joining the Qualitative Research SIG today. For members of AERA, the annual fee for joining the Qualitative Research Special Interest Group for regular non-graduate student members is $10, and the annual fee for graduate students is $5. As members of the QR SIG, you will gain access to a network of fellow qualitative scholars, as well as our many activities, ranging from mentoring opportunities to our podcast series to updates and news related to recent qualitative publications and jobs. Please visit the American Educational Research Association's website at www.aera.net to join the Qualitative Research SIG today.
You know, this is such a good reminder of the value of other ways of knowing and being than just using the way that is and that disconnects you from your body and from your emotionalities. This is like deeply embodied, very, very emotion-based, but not just that, but there is a sort of like a beautiful spiritual understanding as well, you know, and those sorts of culturally grounded ways of knowing that can't all be translated and, you know, like repurposed in research language and put it out for the world to consume. Either you sort of know how to be in those ways of knowing and being and in those connections, or you don't, and it's okay either way, but those are the connections that spoke to you, which is interesting because as I was reading your work, I found myself crying, cheering, laughing, cussing, and this going on this journey with you, which was ultimately very healing, you know, from bearing witness and also from my own embodied experience as well. So could you talk about the role of healing in your work and how it might have shaped your thinking?
So I think I want to reiterate that it took me 5 years to complete this book. The whole process of writing this book was a process of intentional process of bringing in justice to my mother's. And I mean, as I mentioned briefly already, I want to emphasize that, you know, this wasn't only about my biological mother, but also other mothers of color who had prepared a place for me to come and encounter their memories in this territory. So while that was my intention, but the process had become also a process of healing and restoration for me. And in fact, those 5 years became the time I needed to be healed through my loss while I was fighting for justice to my mothers of color through my writing as inquiry. I think before I actually talk other things, I must acknowledge that, you know, this time luxury, like taking 5 years, partly came from my positional privilege as a full professor, where I didn't have to worry about, you know, graduating, getting tenured or getting promoted, etc. But at the same time, I want other qualitative researchers to consider perhaps sometime we need this long staying in a certain kind of work, especially if the work is healing us. In fact, through this work, I have reaffirmed how important it is for us to produce work that heals us as researchers in the process of working on it, working through it. Because the work that heals us as researchers will heal others as well, whether they are our participants, readers, or communities we work for. So perhaps now we can even ask, what does it mean that we as researchers work toward the healing knowledge? What different methodologies would be available for us to do such work?
That's a lot. You know, I think like I have always thought about the work of justice, you know, it has to be complemented with the work of healing, you know? So the work of justice or the work of equity or the work of creating space and visibility from previous unjust things, you know, requires a healing. It doesn't require, it's almost foolish to require the dominant group to be responsible for creating anything because the privileged are not incentivized to do anything for those that they oppress, right? So then how do we do this work without always being in relationship with the colonizer, the privileged, the master class, all of that? And so I always felt that the work of any kind of equity-based work, you know, where you're, you know, demonstrating the oppression, demonstrating the wounds, require a complementary healing piece attached to it. You know, justice work and healing work should go hand in hand. So I know that we don't have a lot of time to discuss all the great things about your work because there is so much to discuss. So to the listeners, please go and buy her book, Decolonial Feminist Research, Haunting Rememory and Mothers. And I want to sort of wrap up this conversation with advice that you might have for someone whose approach to qualitative research is non-traditional and maybe culturally situated, but doesn't have a concrete path for doing that work and might be feeling unsure and, you know, what might they think about or how might they think about doing this work? Clearly there are no steps, but what might be some guiding points of consideration?
I must say that a colonial, Western, modern episteme really screwed us. I think our value on universality is a colonial desire. Meaning that, you know, cultural outsiders like me are trained to think that our particular is somehow too particular, meaning that, you know, not valuable, not legitimate. But our particular existence constitute our interdependent ecology. So I think We have to remember that particularity and universality are not opposite concepts, but rather they constitute each other. So the challenge is how we can research and remember those interdependence and connectivity our particularity has with other particularities and also a larger historical and cultural context. And so actually, you know, as a way to do that, I encourage researchers to be real, like authentic in their questions. I think sometimes it's scary to put out our real authentic question. I mean, I must admit that I felt that when I wrote this book. But to me, authenticity is our response ability to our particularity. And without our particularity, there's no way for us to respond to what surrounds us. And we must remember, there's always a rich tradition and history of knowledge productions in any community or culture. And so I think we need to remember that we're not alone or interdependent. And what we need is the work of remembering our connectivity from our location.
Yeah, I appreciate that so much. I get the authentic bit. I feel scared to use the word now because every time I use authentic, I hear like all these critiques in my head, how people would say this and what is co-opted and not and essentialized and not. And then sometimes I'm like, some things are just what it is. You know, you can say authentic or change it to genuine if you want, change it to sincere if you want, but there are certain ways in which we show up that is unguarded, that is a free-flowing version of ourselves in that moment, you know, in which we're allowing things to rise to the surface, including these questions, and allowing us the freedom to choose to be curious about those questions, have a beginner's mind with these questions. So I think that is a really strong advice that people should pursue that and know that knowledge exists beyond what has been presented to them. It exists pretty much in the world in various forms, relationships, things that are within academia, but things that are even outside of academia, outside of our fields and all of that.
If I add one more, what do we represent as a knowledge always betrays an actual reality we try to share, right? So here I'm not just simply talking about how our knowledge is partial and limited, but when we try to represent, there's always violence involved, right? And so when we take this betrayal of representation seriously, I think we as researchers can approach ethics of doing research at another level, especially when we do our work in the name of decolonial justice and equity.
Yeah. Thank you so much for your time and your generosity and opening yourself up to share your thoughts and how you came about writing the book and your thoughts about qualitative inquiry. There is much to unpack here. Unfortunately, we don't have the time to unpack all of it, but I want to thank you and I want to thank the Qualitative Research SIG for allowing me the honor to interview you.
Thank you so much.